NBC Monitor News on the Hour. Here's Lou Wood.
The top political advisors on President Nixon's staff were summoned to the Winter White House at Key Biscayne, Florida today for a lengthy private meeting with the president. Attorney General Mitchell, Counselors Robert Finch and Bryce Harlow, Assistants Ehrlichman and Haldeman, OEO Director Rumsfeld, and Special Counsel Charles Colson were all there. Most of them played significant roles in the recent election campaign. White House Press Secretary Ronald Ziegler minimized the political overtones of the meeting. He said it was a discussion of long-range planning of administration domestic programs between now and the 1972 presidential election. A surprise witness today in the inquest into the kidnapped slaying of Canadian official Pierre Laporte. The story from Ed Doyle of station CJAD in Montreal.
The testimony of a 19-year-old student into the inquest of a slain Quebec cabinet minister has ended. In testimony today, Bernard Lotsy admitted he and three other men kidnapped Labour Minister Pierre Laporte, but he said he was not around when Mr. Laporte was murdered. He also said one of the men who took part in the kidnapping, Paul Rose, was not present when the killing occurred. He said Rose left because he felt the police were onto him. Mrs. Rose, the mother of Paul and Jacques, both of whom are still being sought by police in connection with the incident, said her two sons and another man, Francis Simard, had left for Texas on September 23rd, before any of the kidnappings had occurred. She commented, they went there because that's where everyone wears guns. Mrs. Rose, her testimony, sometimes punctuated by sobbing, told the inquest the trio returned on October 8th when they heard British diplomat James Cross had been abducted. Mrs. Rose also identified articles found in the home where Mr. Laporte was believed killed as belonging to her two sons. This is Ed Doyle in Montreal.
A surprise witness today in the inquest of the kidnapped slaying of Canadian official Pierre Laporte, reported by Ed Doyle. Moscow's Red Square was filled with soldiers, military equipment, and ballistic missiles today, the traditional parade marking the anniversary of the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution. But there were no major American diplomats in attendance this year. Top U.S. diplomats were ordered to snub the Soviet celebrations and receptions in world capitals as a demonstration of U.S. annoyance with Russia's detention of two American army generals. Their plane strayed across the Turkish-Armenian border 17 days ago. Former Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev watched the parade on television. The 76-year-old former Kremlin leader is confined to bed at his country home with what has been described as a very serious heart disturbance. Khrushchev was scheduled to be taken to a hospital, but told doctors he wanted to stay home on this national day with his family. Moshe Dayan, the defense minister of Israel, says there is no other way to end the Mideast war except by talks and agreement. And Dayan says he is in favor of resuming the negotiations with the Arabs under the guidance of UN mediator Gunnar Yaring. It was not clear if Dayan meant Israel should drop its condition for returning to the Yaring talks, that being a rollback of Soviet missiles in the Suez Canal ceasefire zone by Egypt. Yesterday, Israeli Premier Golda Meir said her nation would not rejoin the talks until Egypt pulls back the missiles. South Vietnamese troops claim to have captured a Viet Cong supply headquarters only 15 miles from Saigon. The South Vietnamese patrol killed six enemy guerrillas and captured two. One of the prisoners was said to be a finance and economy officer for the Viet Cong in the Saigon area. In Cambodia, a combined South Vietnamese and Cambodian army task force is massing for what could be the biggest allied operation against the communists since the American incursion in June. The joint task force is set to strike at North Vietnamese and Viet Cong strongholds near the capital of Phnom Penh. In a Phnom Penh movie house last night, communist terrorists rolled two hand grenades down the aisle. The explosions killed at least 18 persons and wounded nearly 50 others. National Guardsmen have been ordered into Henderson, North Carolina to enforce a 12-hour curfew. Officials arrested about 40 youths last night during a hectic night of riots in a predominantly black neighborhood. People in Lawrence, Kansas are still trying to figure out how Philip C. Hill was elected Justice of the Peace last Tuesday. Hill is a 23-year-old college dropout who has a beard and long hippie-style hair, and what's more, he admits he's a dope pusher. He was asked why the voters chose him.
They were just voting the ticket, and they weren't, you know, paying any attention to the issues. We were doing our, you know, private talking here and talking to people, and we were paying out a few bribes. Most of it was in our local Kansas dopes, but it didn't cost us much.
Hill indicated those bribes were marijuana given to hippie friends, so they would not tell the press and the Democratic Party who he was. The significance of the request is not clear yet, but the United Auto Workers has asked all members of its General Motors Council to be in Detroit Wednesday. The council has the power to recommend acceptance or rejection of a contract offer if a new one goes on the table. Union President Leonard Woodcock is denying reports that an end to the 54-day-old strike against General Motors may be imminent. The hour's top story, President Nixon held a long and private meeting with his top political advisors in Key Biscayne, Florida today. Lou Wood, NBC News, reporting.
Listen again on the hour for NBC Monitor News.
Now a check of WNBC weekend happenings. First, the weather forecast, partly sunny this afternoon with highs around 60. Fair and cooler tonight with a low in the upper 30s. Sunny and cool tomorrow with a high around 50. Precipitation probability 20% this afternoon, 10% tonight, and near zero tomorrow. Right now, the winds are from the southwest at 9 miles an hour. The relative humidity 36%. It's 64 degrees and it's sunny right now in New York City. A Radio 66 check of the metropolitan area weekend activity shows the public is invited to Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, 315 Main Street at Franklin Avenue, West Orange, New Jersey, for a gay 90s fair that will be going on until 8 p.m. this evening. Nathan Milstein will perform Bach partitas and sonatas for solo violin tonight in Grace Rainey Rogers Auditorium. For ticket information, call 736-2211. The Billy Taylor Trio will present a benefit concert at C.W. Post College in Brookville, Long Island tonight. That's at 8 p.m. Tickets will be available at the door. Jerry Jeff Walker is appearing at the Village Gaslight, 116 McDougal Street. Call 674-2580 for reservations. Free workshops in the arts are being offered by the Muse at the Bedford Lincoln Neighborhood Museum. Classes begin today. They're offered on a first-come, first-served basis. The Muse is located at Bedford Avenue and Lincoln Place in Brooklyn. Now checking the traffic story, Long Island Railroad trains running normally. Penn Central trains are on time. On the Northern State Parkway, traffic is moderate. Bergen County, New Jersey, traffic is moderate. On the Thruway in New York, traffic is moderate both ways. And all roads in the city at this hour, traffic is moving well. This is Hugh Morgan, WNBC News. The next WNBC Happening Report will be heard at 4:30. And now back to NBC's Monitor.
Just leave your dial on the tip-tier monitor. Lean back and stay a while on the tip-tier monitor.
I'm Bill Cullen, pinch hitting for Joe Garagiola. Well, not pinch hitting, I'm running for him here on Monitor. We strongly urge you not to move away from ear range. Coming up in a few minutes, outspoken opinions on the handling of the Paris peace talks by a distinguished diplomat who once was our chief negotiator. Meanwhile, music by Ray Stevens, Sunset Strip.
lights cast their spell on me. All the happy hearts are here with their glass on me and clear. And the whole idea seems to fit so well on me.
Issue of Look magazine, diplomat W. Averill Harriman, who was formerly the chief U.S. negotiator at the Paris peace talks, states that if Hubert Humphrey had been elected president, we would be out of Vietnam by now. That South Vietnamese President Thieu is dictating American policy and calls the Vietnamization of the war immoral. On Monitor Now, Governor Harriman discusses these opinions and analyses and analyzes current developments in a conversation with NBC's Dean Mell.
Governor Harriman, Washington is putting out hints that Hanoi may be edging towards substantive negotiations on the Indochina war. Do you see any such encouragement?
No, I don't see them now. I don't see any real signs that both sides are in a mood to come to a composition of the problem.
Yet in the public mind, among the American electorate, they seem to think that the Vietnam War has wound down and is being phased out.
Well, I think some people do that, but the best the President Nixon has offered is that by next spring, 2.5 years after he's been in office, he'll have less than half of our troops out, and there's no guarantee as to whether the others will ever come out or when they'll come out. This isn't good enough.
You believe the Nixon administration's offer to negotiate a complete and total troop withdrawal is just a spurious offer?
No. I think it's a sincere offer, but I think that they expect the other side to give in to what we want to do. Now, at the same time, he makes this offer in Paris. The Pentagon and others from the White House, I think, I don't know where it comes from, but it's all over the papers, that we've got him licked now. We couldn't have made this offer a couple of months ago. Now we've got him on the run. Where they're in such bad trouble, they're going to have to accept our offer. That kind of a statement here at home makes me think that they're interested in propaganda at home rather than getting a solution. You don't say to the man you're trying to negotiate a settlement that he's licked and he's got to settle on your terms. You can't expect him to deal with you sensibly, if that's your point of view. Now, I'm still hopeful that this administration will, that public pressure will continue to be put on this administration to force them to move in the direction that I think we ought to do.
Governor Harriman, both sides have now met for more than 90 times at the Paris conference table, and Ambassador Bruce, who now holds the position you once held, recently said we have had another flat rejection of everything our side has proposed. This seems to be the usual no progress statement. Just what goes on at these conferences? Just what form does a typical negotiating session take? What happens in 2 to 3 to 4 hours?
We only had two to negotiate. It was just the North and ourselves. And after we'd made our formal statements, which were given out to the press was not present, but they were given out, then we used to have what they called a tea break, we called a coffee break. And I thought it was a good idea for us to join forces, so one day I invited them to have their tea with us. It was very formal and stiff in the beginning, and then we began to joke, and then we began to talk about Cy Vance thinks he's a poet, and so does Swan Tree, and they talked about their own poetry, and that was the way we broke the ice. Then we began to talk about serious subjects. They got very interested in things like Miracle Rice. They want to be independent, we learned, of the Chinese. Above all else, they're like Tito in that respect. They're communists, and I don't like them, but we've got to take them as they find them. They wanted to get, know about rice, because they have to get 300,000 tons a year from China. They want to grow. They know that it isn't just the seed. They've got to have the know-how to do it. And that's one reason why I'm satisfied we can make a deal with the North to, make an agreement with them if we sit down and talk. And we learned a lot about each other. And it, then we had secret negotiations. And they took place in secluded spots. That's when we began to make progress.
In retrospect, you can say that those secret talks did make, eventually resulted in some movement.
No, resulted in movement, but it made it possible for us to come to an agreement, which permitted President Johnson to stop the bombing, which he did. You know, the end of October, and that was leading to all four of us sitting down together. That's why I say when President Thieu refused to sit down privately, he knew perfectly well he was throwing a monkey wrench into the whole machinery of negotiations. Now, you can't talk about these things in public, because we take a certain position, they take a certain position. Now, if that's said publicly, and one or the other backs down, the papers are all full of it, North Vietnam backs down, the United States back down, politically it's impossible to do that. On the other hand, the art of a negotiation is to try to find out what the other fellow really wants, and then see how close it is to what you really want. Throw away the scenery and the unimportant things, and then you can find a way often of coming together, and agreement is not so difficult. But if we stand, if you don't know, if they've got 8 points and you don't know which of them are serious or what part of them is serious, you get nowhere, absolutely nowhere. Now, take, for instance, this present negotiation. President, the one point which the NLF 8 points and President Nixon's 5 points have one thing in common. Both want a ceasefire. There's one rather wide difference. President Nixon wants it first, and the NLF suggests it as the last move. Now you can say, well, that's impossible. That's not impossible. You sit down and say, now we both want a ceasefire. What is it that you want to have agreed to before you have a ceasefire? They asked you, why do you want a ceasefire first? Why don't you agree to these different things? And you can compose the differences if you will sit down in that spirit. And that has to be done in private. But no negotiator is any better than his instructions. And he must be given the flexibility. He must be told, you try to find out what the other fellow wants. And yet the communists don't dominate them. On the other hand, if you have the non-communists fragmented in a number of different ways, and the communists can get into the government, then they can push the other people out. So I want to see a Vietnamization of the peace, not the Vietnamization of the war. I want to see the killing stopped.
How far can we go, or how far should we go, in dictating to the Saigon government what it should do?
Well, as long as American boys are being killed to keep that government in power, we have got a right to say, you do thus and so, or else we get the heck out of there. I mean it. And if we talk Turkey in that way, Thieu will come to heel. But you can't go in and say, salute, dear Mr. President, it would be charming and nice and delightful if you would do this and so. You're not going to get anywhere. He's a very shrewd, tough hombre. He's lasted through the French colonial war. He lasted through every one of these coups. And he's a very, very shrewd, shrewd operator. You know, when I was a kid, ad infinitum, you take half a step to the end. It was one of the most intriguing ideas. You never got to that wall. You took halfway, you know. That's the trouble with Vietnam. You'll never get to the end of that through military means. You can expand the war to include Cambodia and Laos and North Vietnam and China, the Soviet Union, but you can't win it. And we're not trying to win a war, you know. Limited action doesn't try to win a war. We try to achieve political objectives. And therefore, this idea of talking about winning a war is nonsense. That we're not there to win a war, we're there to achieve a political objective, which is a very limited one. President Johnson and President Nixon both have said, all we want is to let the people of South Vietnam decide their own future. That's the maximum we want. Now, how you arrive at that, or how you achieve that objective, is another matter. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't think we have any right to continue the killing.
Governor Harriman, thank you again for being our Monitor guest. This is Dane Mell reporting for Monitor.
And that was, of course, W. Averill Harriman, veteran diplomat and former chief United States negotiator at the Paris peace talks. From politics, let's turn to music. Karen Wyman sings, "I Don't Know How to Love Him."
I don't know how to love him.
Teenager Karen Wyman. Speaking of teenagers, do you know what legal rights they have? Tonight on Monitor, Murray the K discusses the matter with the author of Up Against the Law. That sounds interesting. Also, on Saturday Night Monitor, the Queen of the Delta, Bobby Gentry. She drops by for a visit. Hey, why don't you do the same?
Didn't we? Hey, if you're in Seattle or the Pacific Northwest, you heard it on King Seattle, K-N-I-G, didn't you? I'm Bill Cullen, and I'll be back, B-A-C-K.
Hi there, this is Cindy Adams. Later today on Monitor, I'll be talking with... Oh, well, why give it away? Just stick around. You won't want to miss this one.
Thank you.
Twice every day, National flies the world's most popular plane to the sun. The first and only 747s from New York to Miami, with great food and the only stereo entertainment between here and Miami. This winter, go to the sun on the plane with everything under the sun. There's no extra fare. Take one of National 747 Sun Kings to Miami and back for only $96 excursion fare.
Don't take just a plane when you want to fly. Take National 747 instead, and you're gonna have a great
National or your travel agent to fly the only 747s to Miami.
We're looking for sunshine.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC New York.
Have a happy day.
This is Hugh Morgan, WNBC News at 4:30. It's 64 degrees and clear in New York City. Four black organizations have urged a massive mobilization in support of black militant Angela Davis. The groups Black Women for the Freedom of Angela Davis, the New York branch of the Committee to Free Angela Davis, and the Republic of New Africa and the Harlem Writers Guild said Miss Davis was innocent of charges preferred against her. They said they were organizing support to pressure Governor Rockefeller into refusing to extradite the 27-year-old former philosophy instructor in California, where she's wanted on a murder charge. Jane Logan, speaking on behalf of Black Women for the Freedom of Angela Davis, criticized the capitalist press for trying to turn Miss Davis into an exceptional Negro. The Liberal Party's vice chairman, Alex Rose, says that Eldon Clingham speaks for what Rose called a very small minority in the party. Earlier today, Clingham, who is New York City Council minority leader, called for the resignation of the Liberal Party's top officers. Clingan criticized the officers for failing to swing the party's support from Republican Senator Charles Goodell to Democrat Richard Ottinger. Clingan said he was speaking for what was called the Liberal Party for New Politics. In response, Rose said that in our convention, Goodell got 67% of a roll call vote. The people Clingan represents nominated Paul O'Dwyer. Former Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev is suffering from more heart problems, but he won't enter a hospital until the 53rd anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution is over. Friends say the 76-year-old Khrushchev has suffered a relapse of a heart ailment that kept him hospitalized for 3 months last summer. Doctors wanted Khrushchev to enter a special hospital reserved for top Kremlin officials, but those doctors didn't plan on encountering the strong will of Khrushchev, which kept him in charge of the Kremlin from the death of Joseph Stalin until 1964. Official Soviet sources say that Russia has informed the United States at the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks in Helsinki that it wants a freeze on both offensive and defensive nuclear missiles. U.S. intelligence sources believe that the Soviet Union has escalated the arms race into outer space. The sources say the confirmation of the controlled explosion of two orbiting Soviet space satellites last month indicates that Russia has resumed tests of a killer space satellite designed to destroy enemy reconnaissance and weapons satellites. Tonight in sports, the Rangers play the Kings in Los Angeles. Broadcast time here on WNBC Radio will be at 10:55. Now a check of WNBC Weekend Happening. First, the weather forecast, partly sunny this afternoon, with highs near 60, fair and cooler tonight with a low in the upper 30s. Tomorrow, sunny and cool with a high around 50. Precipitation probability is 20% this afternoon, 10% tonight, and near zero tomorrow. Right now, the winds are from the southwest at 9 miles an hour. The relative humidity is 64%. It's 64 degrees and it's clear in New York City right now. A check of WNBC Weekend Activity shows St. Mary's Players Guild will present Why Not Join the Giraffes, a comedy in three acts, tonight at 8:30. That's in St. Mary's School Auditorium, 225th Street and Carpenter Avenue in the Bronx. The Heights Players of 26 Willow Place, Brooklyn Heights, will present the Philadelphia Story tonight at 8:30. Tickets are available at the door. The annual Handicraft Show and Bazaar will be held at Mount Carmel Home for the Aged, 539 West 54th Street. That will be going on today and tomorrow between the hours of 1 and 7 p.m. Again, the top story, four black organizations have urged a massive mobilization in support of black militant Angela Davis. This is Hugh Morgan, WNBC News. The next check of WNBC weekend happenings will be heard at 5:30. Now back to NBC's Monitor.
Just stay where you are. We'll bring you more.
Bill Cullen and Monitor with an item for the end of election week. Did you know? That has nothing to do with it. That was an ad lib. Did you know that Australia requires eligible voters to vote? Anyone who fails to do so without good reason receives a fine. That's a fine idea. Further thoughts on last Tuesday's election and the economic picture coming up in a few minutes. First, music, The Marmalade with Rainbow. Monitor, Edwin Newman's Business News, brought to you by USF&G. Full coverage for people, places, and things. Ed will be with you after this word.
USF&G. Your local USF&G agent is the insurance professional, the independent businessman you can trust for sound, personalized counseling that helps protect just about everything you value. Life, home, property, business. Consult him with confidence as you would your doctor or lawyer. Your USF&G agent, listed in your yellow pages.
Full coverage for people, places, and things. USF&G.
Your USF&G agent, the insurance professional, representing United States Fidelity and Guarantee Company. Call him. He's listed in your yellow pages.
For full coverage of people, places, and
Here's Edwin Newman.
The results of last Tuesday's elections were mixed, but probably the Republicans had more to be disappointed about than the Democrats did. One thing seems clear. The economic downturn so carefully engineered by the Nixon administration hurt the Republicans because it went on longer than the administration expected it to. Administration economic policy has been designed to slow down the inflation that began when the Democrats were in power. But whatever the motives, the voters clearly do not want more of the same. And President Nixon will have to have a healthier economy well before the 72 elections if he hopes to win. This being the case, the administration may be on the threshold of a big gamble, a policy of economic expansion that could rekindle the inflation the administration has spent 2 years trying to damp down. Robert Johnson, an economist with Payne, Weber, Jackson, and Curtis, the brokerage house, says that the elections are going to mean an expansion of the money supply, lower interest rates, and fewer curbs on government spending, regardless of budget deficits. There should be no implication here that economic decisions are made in Washington for purely political reasons. They're not. But a policy such as the one just outlined might yield large political rewards. Of course, if it led to inflation, it would also have economic consequences. Professor David Fand of Wayne State University puts it this way. When inflation begins, the goodies come first and the baddies come later. He means that at first inflation raises prices and wages and profits, but that later prices and wages keep going up and profits do not. They may go the other way. The fan principle has another side. Under deflation, the baddies come first and the goodies come later. That is the theory on which the administration has been operating. And for 2 years, Americans have had the baddies. Rising unemployment, dropping overtime wages, high interest rates, and the worst bear market in 40 years. Now there may be a change, with Tuesday's election results a factor. For the president and his advisors must calculate whether the recovery they are counting on can come in time politically. And they also must calculate whether inflationary moves too soon might undo everything they've been trying to accomplish economically. It is a ticklish situation. In this corner, the guess is that Mr. Nixon will not take the goodies now and risk the baddies later, but neither will he keep the baddies going so that the goodies are long postponed. He will try to do something of both, with mixed economic results and mixed political consequences also. Edwin Newman, NBC News, New York. Now, a final word from USFNG.
USFNG. Your USFNG agent has the right people, experience, insurance to help protect all you value. Representing United States Fidelity and Guarantee Company, he's the independent businessman you can trust for professional, personalized counseling.
The full coverage of people, places, and things.
Listen again later today for Edwin Newman's Business News on Monitor. An oldie from Frank Sinatra. You're going to hear from me, Francis.
Move over, sun, and give me some sky. I got me some wings. I'm eager to try. I may be unknown, but wait till I've flown. You're gonna hear from me. Make me some room, you people up there. On top of the world, I'll meet you, I swear. I'm staking my claim, so remember my name. You're gonna hear from me. A fortune smiles on the road before me. The world over. clover. That's how it's gonna be.
From Sinatra, you hear. Cindy Adams ahead on the Monitor Beacon.
Come with Swiss Air to the best skiing and après skiing in the Alps. Take the sun, the tempo, and the nightlife of the Caribbean. Add snow, and you have Snow Beach, Swiss Air's brilliant winter resorts on the sunny side of the Alps, where you can have a wonderful time, even if you don't ski. Come with Swiss Air to a Snow Beach resort, 2 weeks for as little as $383, including airfare. Price based on group-inclusive tour fare, minimum 15 people. Call your travel agent, or Swiss Air, the airline to all the Alps.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC, New York.
And now, Embarrassing Moments, brought to you as a regular feature by Cindy Adams.
By some quirk, I get my jollies from other people's embarrassing moments. Maybe because I've had so many. Anyway, Joyce Brothers and I were presenters at the International Film and TV Awards dinner, where we compared inelegant moments. Joyce's pet was Donald O'Connor's show 2 years ago. After a solid gold introduction, Dr. Brothers walked to a small podium, shook hands with Roosevelt Greer, who took up most of that small podium, then backed up to go around Rosie. Well, seems there was more of Greer's rear than there was of podium. In full view of the audience and cameras, our celebrated psychologist backed up one step too many and fell flat on her degree. Kate Smith, in the business since 1927, introduced God Bless America and 700 other hit songs, but recalls most, she told me, her long opera-length Pearls experience. Kate Smith is close to 6 feet, weighed 270 then, so when she wore long pearls, you better believe they were long. On stage, in the midst of a heart-plinking ballad, Kate made a grandiose gesture, hooked her right hand onto the pearls, and at the big finish, all that was heard was the plinkety-plink, plink, plink of falling pearls. At the party in his Fifth Avenue home this week, Governor Nelson Rockefeller told me of the day he was speaking about conservation, and he said loud and clear, "What we need desperately for our children to play in is more dark areas." I'd meant park, he grinned, adding, but oh boy, was that a goof at the time. My friend Barbara Walters' most gorgeous faux pas occurred at Lucy Baines Johnson's wedding. Microphone in hand, Barbie doll attacked one elegant guest with, "I'm a reporter for NBC. Would you tell me what you think of the wedding?" "Afraid not," he answered. "I'm Frank Stanton, president of CBS. Me, I had a beaut not long ago. Flying to New York, my seatmate was actor Dane Clark. I told my old buddy I was very successful, doing fabulously, thank you, that this was one of my really, really big, big years. When we landed, I added, my chauffeured Rolls-Royce will drive you home. Chauffeured Rolls, eh? You must be doing great, Dane said. Oh, yes, I yawned. Quite good. And just as I said that, I opened my purse and out fell 3 bars of TWA soap. This is Cindy Adams for Monitor.
Thank you, Cindy. Now, the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me happened in a nudist camp. And it's been happening ever since. This is Joe Garagiola, pinch hitting for Bill Cullum.
Andy, what a good idea to come to a drive-in movie for a change.
Yes, but speaking of a change, did you remember to change the motor oil this morning?
Yes, but I'm so embarrassed. Me, the wife of Andy Granatelli, forgot to have the service station man at SDP oil treatment when he changed the oil.
Oh, don't worry about it, honey. Luckily, I have a can of SDP here in the glove compartment.
Andy, you're not going to add SDP right here in the drive-in.
You know how important it is to add SDP with a winter oil change.
Well, of course, Andy. Everyone knows how it helps their car start easier and faster, but I...
Be right back.
But, Andy, you'll disturb the other couples watching the movie.
Yeah, but just think of the publicity, honey.
Well, it will help the car start all winter long.
Never say Andy Granatelli can't add his own SDP oil treatment. How many people are watching?
Don't worry about it. I can't even find anyone watching the movie, let alone you.
Another chapter in the life of Dolly coming up. Music by the Carpenters. We've only just begun.
We've only just begun.
Adventure? Are you a Raphael Sabatini fan from way back? Okay, danger lovers, get ready, because now we're going to chop onions with a galloping gourmet.
This is Graham Kerr with something which I think might just interest you, just obliquely, and that is, have you seen these chopping gadgets, these things which you pound up and down, looks like a jam tin with a handle on the top, and it's operated by a spring, and it's got choppers underneath, and you go tong, 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 like that, and it chops an onion. Great stuff. I haven't been able to actually summon up the lack of status required to be able to use it. What I like to do is I like to use a knife on an onion to chop it up. What you do is you cut the onion in half, and then you slice it as though you were slicing it all the way through, except that you don't slice it all the way through. You leave about a quarter of an inch on one end. Then you turn the blade and knife, and then you slice it horizontal to the board, once, twice, three times, and then you cut it down vertical to the board at 90 degrees to your first cut. Oh, gosh, isn't this fun? And you chop that up, and then the most beautiful tiny little squares of onion come up. You might like to use the plumper. I like to use a knife. That's Graham Kerr from Monitor.
Well, if you can fight your way through those onion fumes later on tonight, the Galloper will join you in the kitchen where he needs butter. So give all you can. We're on our way to the Monitor newsroom, after which you can come back. I'll be here.